Part 4, Chapter 4, in which Harvey returns to Spain. Quote, Mahogany, lejano y solo, noche negra, luna grande y aceitunas en mi mano. Aunque conozca las cantinas, yo nunca llegaré a Mahogany. Mahogany, lejano y solo. See Federico García Lorca, Canción del Jinete, translation, altered from the original poem. Mahogany, distant and alone, black night, full moon, and olives in my hand. Although I know the bars, I'll never get to Mahogany. Mahogany, distant and alone. When Harvey's train left the Cerber station, he could feel the Spanish sun filling his travel-weary spirit, and by the time he reached Madrid, it had washed away his fever. There were not so many trains in Spain, and everything moved more slowly, so his chances were greatly improved of spending time on the unmoving earth. In fact, even in the crowds of Madrid, the meandering manner of the people enabled him to stray from the station, and though he was temporarily trapped in the metro, by evening he was walking in El Retiro. Footnote. The park El Retiro, similar to Central Park in New York, is located in the middle of Madrid. It was a classical midsummer Spanish evening, with voices and music filling the trees, reflections of lights dancing in the fountains, and a warm breeze wafting up the walk. Harvey stopped at an outdoor bar to empty a porrón before his weariness overcame him, and he found a secluded bench and lay down to sleep. Footnote. A porrón is an elegant blown glass container with a thin spout. Filled with a liter of beer, it is traditionally emptied into a human mouth from a distance of several feet. The drinker is encouraged to empty the porrón without stopping, a feat which sometimes takes several minutes. It had been more than 40 nights since the captain had slept on solid ground, but instead of refreshing him, it brought him even greater fatigue. He had grown accustomed to the clicking lullaby of the rails and the single direction of his train, but now he dreamed of all the trains he had been on, traveling in their myriad directions, passing and colliding in his mind. As a result, he scarcely slept a wink, and with the first light of day, he made his way back to the Atocha station. The train he boarded had bus seating, with benches facing each other and an aisle down the center, and when they pulled out of the station, he saw a group of clouds catching the first rays of light. Ah, he thought, as Madrid faded into the distance. The sun continued to rise until it began to warm the car, and Harvey opened a window. When he did, he noticed a small sign asking the passengers not to spit on the floor. It had never occurred to the captain to spit on the floor, but now that it had, he decided to do just that. Unfortunately, when he went to give it a try, his mouth would not water, and nothing came out. Pausing to work up some spittle, he tried again, but again nothing came out. Suddenly irritated, he clenched his jaws and tried until something did come out. To his dismay, it was one of his teeth. He looked at the lonely bicuspid, resting on the floor near the aisle, and was inspired to rescue it, but when he bent forward to pick it up, a jerk in the track threw his head against the armrail, cracking his nose and causing it to bleed. Undaunted, he caught the blood in his left hand and continued to grope with his right, until a passing heel speared him in the back of the hand. The woman stopped to apologize, but when she saw our hero look up with blood on his face and a tooth in his hand, she quickly reconsidered and hurried on her way. Hmm, thought Harvey on the airplane, feeling around in his mouth. I wonder which tooth it's going to be. By the time they reached Córdoba, Harvey's nose had stopped bleeding, and his tooth was safe in his pack. And after washing his face in the train station restroom, he wandered into the streets. It was siesta time, and only the tourists were out. They led him to a café on a small plaza, named after the poet Huda Levi. It was cool in the stone shadows, and the captain was calmed by the lethargy of the waiter, who brought him one glass of wine and then brought him another. The liquid felt good against the hole in his gums, and the traces of blood gave it a full, rich flavor. Gradually, as a slow stupor began to rise in his head, the afternoon took on an air of slow motion, and he looked around the plaza. The stucco walls of the buildings were whitewashed and bright in the sun, and he wondered what stories they had heard since the first brick was laid, stories of love and sorrow, stories of joy and pain, and all the quotidian squabbles that filled the day. When the sun reached his table, he moved his chair back into the shade and noticed some graffiti on the wall behind him. There were four lines in Arabic that appeared to be appended to a poem. The poem was illegible, but Harvey could translate the addition. "Had I the tongue of Orpheus to charm with song the stones, I would use it now to keep you and never be alone." That sounds familiar, he thought, but couldn't remember where he had heard it. Eventually evening fell, and the locals came out, and Harvey got up to walk around. The cobblestone streets were illuminated by iron lamps that clung to the sides of the buildings, making Harvey feel as if he had been transported to a time hundreds of years before. In the elbow of one of the streets, a bar called him in for some olives and beer. "This place is clean and well lighted," he thought, when he stepped up to the counter. A man next to him nodded his approval when the captain ordered his second caña, and they began to talk. Footnote. Beer in Spain, when imbibed in more moderate quantities than the crowd-attracting porrón, is served in two sizes of glass, the 8-ounce caña and the 12-ounce tubo. Between gulps of beer and bites of a tortilla, the man explained he was a language professor from the States who, after years of travel, had chosen Córdoba as his favorite town. He offered to show Harvey the sights, and the first place he took him was a Sevillana bar near the mezquita called the Senador. Footnote. The mezquita is the famous Muslim mosque constructed in the 9th century that stands in the old part of the city. Back to the text. His new friend took him to a Sevillana bar near the mezquita called the Senador. They could hear the gypsy music as they started down the stairs. There was a dance competition in progress, and the last couple was about to perform. The girl caught the captain's eye. She couldn't have been more than 10 or 11, slender, with black hair, dark eyes, and a round, unblemished face. Her family was at a table nearby, and while her mother was giving her advice, Harvey tried to imagine the girl as she had prepared to go out. He could see her, sitting with straight back in the soft light from a balcony window, staring into the mirror. He could see her hands drawing a brush through her long, straight hair, and the slender muscles along the side of her neck extending as she pulled one lock behind an ear. He could see the pins in her mouth pressing on her lower lip as her tranquil hands drew them, one by one, fixing her mane in a bun at the back of her head. And he could see her mother's hands setting and securing the yellow diadem. The girl was nervous as she waited for her turn, but when she took the stage, she set her chin and fixed her eyes, staring past her partner. With a rasqueado, the dance began. "Mira la cara cara, que es la primera, y la vas seduciendo a tu manera. Esa gitana, esa gitana se conquista bailando por sevillanas." Footnote. By the group Requiebros, song Esa Gitana, translation. Look at her face to face. It's the first pass, and you are seducing her in your own way. That gypsy, that gypsy, that gypsy is conquered by dancing sevillanas. At first only the slow rhythm and the circular sway of hips, and her graceful hands combing the air, releasing their spell. The rhythm and sway, the rhythm and sway. Then a sharp stamp of the heel and a sudden turn of the head. A pause in the song set her partner pacing around her, and when he was done stalking, the rasqueado started them again. Mira la cara a cara, que es la segunda. Cógela por el talle, las caras juntas. Esa gitana, esa gitana se conquista bailando por sevillanas. Translation. Look at her face to face. It's the second pass. Take her by the waist with your cheeks together. Her hands swept her skirt. Her dark eyes flashed. Her head turned again, and a pin flew to the floor. Another turn, and another, and more pins pulled out. A lock of hair loosened and brushed over an ear. Mira la cara, cara, que es la tercera. Mírala con qué gracia se te escapa ella. Esa gitana, esa gitana, esa gitana se conquista bailando por sevillanas. Look at her face to face, it's the third pass. Look at her with what grace she escapes you. Her eyes flashed again, and another lock shook loose, sweeping her neck and falling across one eye. Still the slender, graceful hands, still the rhythm and sway, still the dramatic motion, pulling the pins. Es la cuarta, los lances definitivos, definitivo, que se sienta en su vuelo pájaro herido. Esa gitana, esa gitana se conquista bailando por sevillanas. It's the fourth pass, the definitive thrust, definitive. She feels like a bird wounded in flight. Another turn of the head, and the yellow comb pulled loose, falling to the floor and setting the other locks free. A turn, a sweep, a final turn and snap, and a consummating heel shattered the plastic crown. In the ensuing applause, the girl shook out the last of the pins and rushed to embrace her mother. "Ole!" said Harvey, tearing open a bag of peanuts with his teeth and getting up to dance around the airplane cabin. As the evening wore on, Harvey and his friend went from one bar to another, finding that each one had its own personality. Some were filled with Brits, others with Germans, and still others, remarkably, with Spaniards. They met all types of people, some friendly and generous, some selfish and conceited, and it made Harvey feel good to realize that there were people even emptier than he. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, and the bar was about to close, when our two friends lined up for their last piss of the night. The urinals were a symphony of sound as a dozen men took their turns, filling the night with the trickling harmonics of relief. The next day, Harvey attempted to get to Malaga. He remembered his time with Mahogany in nearby Torremolinos, when he was attacked by the fertile maenads that became the mothers of his children, and he thought he might find his former self there. Unfortunately, before he could get to the coast, he had to change trains in Bobadilla. The station was deserted when he arrived, and the captain wiped his forehead with the back of his hand and walked over to a man with the letters Renfe stitched across the pocket of his shirt. "Has the train left yet?" said Harvey. "The train?" echoed the man. "The train to Malaga. I want to get there this afternoon." "How long have you been in Spain?" said the man. "Why?" "No reason," said the man. "You know that this country is famous for its trains."
"Famous?"
"Very much so," said the man, "though we haven't been able to organize them yet." "What about the train to Malaga?" said Harvey. "It will be here when the others arrive."
"The others?" echoed Harvey.
"The trains from the rest of Spain." Do they all arrive at once? Usually, said the man, though they're not scheduled that way. But mine arrived alone.
It did, said the man.
Are you sure?
You didn't just walk into the station?
No, said Harvey.
That's too bad, said the man. A person who walks still has control.
Control? Echoed Harvey.
I can see that you won't be prepared.
For what?
For the trains, said the man. It's really quite frightful.
Frightful?
Horrifying. All those frantic people, clawing and tearing and scrambling about, trampling and smashing each other, as some try to get off while others try to get on. In the end, they never board the train they want.
It can't be that bad, said Harvey.
Worse, said the man. Only a handful ever get to where they're going, and they get there by mistake.
What happens to the rest?
They go somewhere, said the man, though they never know why or how, or else they board a stationary train.
A stationary train?
They don't think they're stationary, said the man, for the cars are equipped with machines that make the passengers believe, with noise and movements, that they are in motion. Most of them don't move for years, or even decades, while they watch images that pass across the windows.
What's the point? Said Harvey.
The point? Echoed the man.
Well, for one thing, it decreases the anxiety of the travelers, and eliminates their need for transferring from one train to another.
We at the railway hope that passengers will eventually give themselves up entirely to chance, and take whatever train comes along, without caring from where they've come or where they're going. It would eliminate the need for schedules altogether.
You see, continued the man, most people are happy to be on any train at all, for at least then their life has some course, and they're usually grateful to have someone else make the decisions for them.
Have you ever traveled? Asked Harvey.
Of course not, said the man. Why should I? All the world comes here.
Just then a whistle sliced the air, then another, and another, and another, and in an instant the station was filled with trains and people. Just as the manager had predicted, Harvey never did get to Malaga, though he did go everywhere else, and after several weeks of bouncing like a pinball through Bobadilla, he found himself on a train to Seville. Pulling out of the station for the last time, he looked out the window at the other travelers and wondered how many of them had been caught in the same revolving door, planning their trips with infinite care, only to be thrown into confusion.
Some dealt with it better than others, just moving on, while some resisted furiously and eventually collapsed. Harvey could see them on the platforms with their heads in their hands, weeping, "Why me? Why me?"
When Harvey arrived in Seville, he was excited to look around, for he remembered having been there with Mahogany. But before he could leave the station, he was swept onto a train to Cáceres, and from there to Salamanca. It was 6 in the afternoon when Harvey arrived in Salamanca, and though he was sad not to have been able to search for himself in Seville, the life of the Plaza Mayor soon filled his spirit. The place was swarming with students and tourists from all over the world, and Harvey took a seat in one of the outdoor cafes. He watched the extending shadows as they crept up the east facade of the plaza, and he listened to a guitarist who was going from cafe to cafe, followed by a young boy who collected tips in a hat. The musician played songs from the Beatles, James Taylor, and Paul Simon, and when he played some Dylan, the captain had the feeling he was hearing the real stuff. After a while, Harvey noticed an artist doing caricatures, and he went over to let him draw his portrait. At first the artist was puzzled, staring into Harvey's face, and he looked long and hard before he began. Then he set to work, drawing furiously, and in less than 14 minutes the portrait was finished. Then another wave of confusion washed over the artist, for when he stepped back to see what he had done, he realized he had drawn his own face. Harvey left the artist in his confusion
and walked around the plaza until he heard a voice call his name. It had come from a group of students that were drinking at the Maison de Cervantes. They were from Salt Lake City, and one of them had recognized Harvey from a class they had taken at the University of Utah. "Harvey," he said, "from Rex Campbell's Arts and Ideas class." The two were astonished that, in such a remote place, they had both met someone they knew. They embraced and spoke warmly, carrying on a spirited soliloquy for the better part of an hour, until the captain's exhilaration was shattered when his friend asked, "Whatever happened to that girl that was so crazy about you? Wasn't her name Alessandra?" The captain fell silent, then rose and walked away. As soon as he left the plaza, a song from an open bar shattered him again. "Algo se muere en el alma cuando un amigo se va, y va dejando una huella que no se puede borrar. No te vayas todavía, no te vayas, por favor, que hasta la guitarra mía llora cuando dice adiós." Again from the musical group Requiebros, song Cuando un amigo se va, translation. Something dies in the soul when a friend goes away, and it leaves a mark that cannot be erased. Don't leave, please don't leave. Even my guitar cries when it says goodbye. Harvey felt as if his heart were being carved to pieces by a double-edged sword. On one side was his remorse for having left Alessandra, and on the other was his inability to free Mahogany from limbo. Desperate to find relief, he ran down the street until he could no longer hear the music, then darted into a small bodega and ordered a caña. There was a television in the corner that was broadcasting a football game from the States, a preseason match between the Oakland Raiders and the Kansas City Chiefs, and John Madden was announcing the game. Footnote: the situation here is anachronistic, for John Madden was still coaching in 1979. Back to the text. "Look at that Raiders coach," said Madden, "hair a mess, shirt hanging out, shoes covered with mud. There's a coach who cares about football. He's not thinking about what wine to have with dinner." Harvey was staring at the screen, thinking he was John Madden, watching himself announce a game in which he was coaching, when a woman next to him pulled him from his stupor. "¿Te gusta el fútbol americano?" she said. "El fútbol americano?" echoed Harvey. Her name was Chusa, and she had just moved to Salamanca from Madrid. She was impressed by the captain's Spanish, which was almost as polished as her own, and they soon left the bar and went for a walk. They passed numerous establishments, many with people gathered in front of them, laughing and joking, but for Harvey and Chusa, the streets may as well have been empty, for there was a sudden intimacy between them that pushed everything into the background, everything except the rhythm of their steps and the playful exchange of words and gestures. Eventually, they wandered back to the Plaza Mayor, but, rather than sit at a café, they opted for the steps at the northeast corner. Harvey sat against the wall that bordered the steps, and Chusa sat on his left, and as she settled in, he could smell the sweet fragrance of her skin. She moved easily beneath her loose clothing, her white T-shirt exposing a thin waist where it was tucked into her jeans, and her shoulders angular and graceful, accented by her firm, lively breasts. Even her jeans were not tight-fitting, but loose and comfortable on her legs, reaching to the leather loafers she wore without socks. Her bare arms and hands were a microcosm of her slender form, and she wrapped them around her knees and turned to look at Harvey. With sloping back and shoulders, the captain was less attractive, but, looking out from his chiseled eyes, he was able to cast a spell of his own. "Who are you?" she asked, fixed in his stare. He paused to admire her dark hair that was short and cut longer on one side. When she combed it back through her fingers, he caught a glimpse of her left ear, and he imagined her stepping out of the shower, wet hair combed back, and her forehead definitively exposed. "I am a traveler," he said, "a traveler of thoughts and years, of youth long spent and middle age declining, the first volumes finished, and this one presently to close, lingering a moment here, to you opposite turning, bearing my head as on the road, or at some door or opened window, drawing your soul to mine, pausing, and then traveling on." It was growing dark outside the airplane, and the cabin lights went on as the attendants prepared to serve a pre-dinner drink. Harvey could see the cart still several rows away, so he decided to finish the chapter he was reading. The night continued around them. People on the stairs, music from the plaza, cars and mopeds in the streets. But for Harvey and Chusa, it was a distant, undistinguished hum. They were two people in a new place, looking for a sense of assurance, a shared pocket of stillness amid the bustling roar. Hour after hour they sat with each other, Harvey shifting his foot, Chusa stretching her shoulders, Harvey leaning forward, Chusa sitting back, Harvey stretching his arms, Chusa moving closer and laying her head in his lap. He felt the warmth of her cheek on his knee, and he reached out with the palm of his hand. Her hair was warm near her scalp and cool at the ends. He pulled it back from her forehead across her left temple, spreading the warmth with his palm and feeling the night air cool on the back of his hand. He continued to stroke her hair, smoothing its shiny blackness, until he curled it behind her lobe and caressed her inner ear. Though people continued to pass on the steps, Chusa closed her eyes and remained where she was. Her entire being was focused on the warmth of Harvey's knee and on the coolness of her left cheek and ear, warmed by the warmth of his hand. She felt as if he were painting her with an invisible cover against the deepening night, bringing the heat to the surface of her skin, then letting it slip away as he returned for the next stroke. Her heart began to beat to the rhythm of his caress, and her slender form drew closer, and they cuddled on the steps. They remained that way for more than 14 minutes. Then she sat up, and suddenly they weren't touching. The warmth disappeared from Harvey's knee, and the ear he had so delicately exposed vanished beneath a dark shock of hair. It was awkward to be walking after their time in that motionless place, and the streets that were now empty seemed wider and long. As Harvey admired the grace of her step, he noticed her nipples had grown firm in the cool air. But before he could become aroused, Aphrodite shot an arrow of remorse that filled him with the memory of Alessandra. When they were standing on the street in front of her apartment, he reached out once more and curled her hair behind her ear. Then he let her kiss him, and he watched as she went in.